This is Call and Response, celebrating the diversity of the Miami Valley. I'm Darrell Ward. I talk for a living in the Black church and in the community. Today, we're observing the 89th birthday of slain civil rights leader Malcolm X. Joining us is Larry Crowe, an oral historian and producer for the History Makers Online Project. May 19th is Malcolm X's birthday. Why are we still so interested in the life of Malcolm X, nearly 50 years after he was assassinated?
Well, we still Malcolm X, along with to some extent like Marcus Garvey and Paul Robeson, was an international figure and a spokesman for Black people's rights and our position in terms of confronting power in the world. Because everywhere you go in the world, Black people, especially in his days, were subjugated in colonialism or under segregation in the United States and discrimination. And it was the same in Africa and other places, even though they didn't have a majority white population dictating to them. They were still fighting a worldwide, concept of white supremacy. And Malcolm spoke to that, not only on the street corners of Harlem, but in the mosque when he was in the Nation of Islam, but also, in those countries. And, he had relationships with heads of state, the emerging heads of state of the third world, in Africa, the Middle East, and in Asia.
I want to ask for our listeners who may say, well, that's old and we need to, in 2014, we've got other issues and we're in a global society and African-American history or things done wrong to African-Americans, that's way in the past. And
the people who would argue in favor of that are not facing reality. I mean, things have not changed that much. They've changed some, and we owe the civil rights movement. We owe the cultural nationalist movement. We owe people that struggled ahead of us for the positive changes and the freedoms that we have. But it's not over yet. We're not in post-racial America yet.
He didn't have the credentials. He didn't work for some big international organization. How did he blow up?
Well, people, when they heard Malcolm X, and I was like 15 when Malcolm was assassinated, and there wasn't a lot of Malcolm X in the media in those days. And I subsequently, started listening to the records, his
right.
last message,
right.
and the material that was recorded in Detroit and New York and other places where he spoke, Chicago. He resonates with people. When you hear him speak and address an issue, and he says, like, well, this is because you hate yourself. Look at yourself. And who taught you to hate yourself? The same blue-eyed white man. Well, everybody knows that's true. it's true. But people don't really. You might hear it on a corner or in a barbershop, but nobody gets up and says that.
We are never taught about any Black hero. Only someone we're shown in history is my grandfather was picking cotton. Cotton picking don't move me. No. But when it comes to teaching the Black people something about great Black men who stood their ground, who were scientists, who were civilizers, who were fathers of culture and civilization, the white man has shrewdly written that role out of the textbook.
He actually would say that. He said, well, what sense does it make to be nonviolent? If you're not going to be nonviolent with me, why should I be nonviolent with you? I mean, nonviolence was a strategy, of course, and I think he understood that. But the concept, and it didn't work everywhere.
Right.
It didn't work
right.
in the streets of New York City and some of the issues that they had there, like it worked in Selma, Alabama. So
there are those who love Dr. King and are afraid of Malcolm X. Why is that?
Well, first of all, we have a false notion of Dr. King that was, I think, perpetrated by his family because they were tired of being in trouble all the time. Because they tried to assassinate Martin Luther King all the time. His family was in constant danger. They had to have guards around the house and move secretly. And I think Coretta Scott King was trying to avoid that when they created the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change. Malcolm X, likewise, caused people to really look at – I know in 63 when I was 13, after JFK was assassinated, he said it was a case of the chickens coming home to roost, meaning that the U.S. has – you know, sponsored and carried out the assassination of world leaders all over the globe. And, you know, and it's now we actually know that. I mean, in those days he was, you know, some could say that was speculation. Now in retrospect, you have the FBI files, you have records, you can go back and look and then see where the role they played in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba and other people. He was right. He said, and you know, it's not that he wanted to see Kennedy assassinated, but the U.S. government have you know, there are things the Obama administration is doing now that if we really thought about them are not dissimilar to what George Bush was doing. It's because being president does not allow you to have total control over what's going on. It's, as Eisenhower said, a military-industrial complex is complicated. Mm-hmm. So Malcolm tried to clear up some of those complications for us, to try to draw the lines, to try to, you know, delineate what was actually going on.
Why should we celebrate? Why should we? Because there are the listeners listening now who are saying to themselves, well, he was a crook. He was a villain.
The reason why we should focus on Malcolm is because he, as you said, he tried to make things plain. He loved his people unconditionally, and we were his project. He was the only public speaker in those days who really made that clear. He said, I don't have anything against anybody else. He says, yeah. I want peace throughout the world. He says, but my aim is black nationalism. I want to see black people, you know, step up and take their place in decision making, in the economic life of the world, and, you know, and the cultural life of the world, to make the mark that we can make. And that's what he was striving for.
Malcolm was clear, and that's one of the things that I love about his voice. It resonates with so many of us. But, you know, everybody who's written about him has not been celebrated. Dr. Manning Marable, who is a native of Dayton, wrote a book about him that I understand has been very controversial.
Yeah, it's been kind of controversial. I mean, he received praise from a lot of the higher echelon academics in the black community, like Skip Gates and others. They said it was a great book. I don't know if they read it or had, but it's got good content. It has some good content, but he spends too much time, I think, on innuendo and unsupported data. Like he says, he infers that Malcolm may have been gay, you know. Well, if he was, nobody really knows it, and his references don't really substantiate it. Shorty's cousin told Bruce Perry, who is the author of a Malcolm X book, a white man, told him that story that Bruce Perry repeated, then Zach Condo repeated to his, and he's sorry he repeated it now, Zach Condo is, and he's, in his book, he says, I wish I had never said that because it's unsubstantiated, it's just some talk.
So there's innuendo, there's some unsupported assertions, that kind of thing. I think that what all of the listeners should take away is that intellect is non-racial. You know, Malcolm X was this wonderful brain that was here, that spoke to issues that really mattered for black people. Black people were his agenda. You know, that this is what I do. This is my bag. This is what I carry. But if you really value truth, you listen. And I think one of the things that people can do as we celebrate his birthday is listen. Because he, when you really listen to Malcolm X, he's not trying to beat you down or hate you or hate your mama or anything like that. He's just speaking truth. And he does it so well. You know, I love the fact that Malcolm was a brother who, you know, he spouted certain rhetoric and then he went to the Holy Land and he saw that it was different.
Dr. James Turner of Cornell used to talk about this all the time. We'd bring him to Chicago every year. He'd speak at the University of Chicago. But he would always say that when Malcolm's spiritual experience, as explained by Malcolm X, it's better to have Malcolm explain it, and he did explain it. He said, I had a spiritual experience over there. He said, and I saw people who were righteous. They were all colors.
Yeah.
He said, but when I'm back in the United States, and I know who the enemy of black people is in the United States. It's the enemy is white supremacy. It's not all white people, every individual white person, but the institution
That's
of white
good.
Supremacy. Is our enemy. Any institution that puts white ahead of any color, you know, any other people, and their rights and privileges above everyone else, and they walk over everybody else, it's wrong, you know. So it has to be, we have to fight against that, and we have to, you know, you know, hold up that which holds us up in front of our people. That's what we have to do.
The majority of our listeners are probably white. How should they respond to Malcolm X?
I don't spend a lot of time trying to sort that out for them. But there are white people, heroic white people, that talk to white people about these issues. And they're here in Yellow Springs and in Dayton, too. But I think that what we should come away with this discussion with is that, you know, we're at the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X, which was something that was a collusion between government and Nation of Islam. I mean, it wouldn't have happened unless Nation of Islam was a part of it, you know, and they pulled the trigger, actually. You know, but when we think about the life of Malcolm X, we think about someone who represented, you know, some of our highest ideals. And when you listen to him talk, you listen to his discourses on the streets and in the he was everywhere. He spoke at Harvard, spoke in London, everywhere, you know, just but and people brought him to speak because he made sense. Yep. You know, he made sense. He simply made sense. So that's what we should take away from this, and that we should read the things he would say were informed by education. He read. He said he could spend the rest of his life in a library, and his curiosity would take the rest. I mean, he was that curious.
I don't advocate any kind of hate. I don't believe in any form of segregation or any form of racism, but I don't believe in forcing my desire for brotherhood upon those who aren't willing to accept it.
Of course, I think the Christians would say that they also believed in brotherhood. What did you say to that?
I'd say they believe in it, but don't practice it.
Are there other movements that resonate with you that you'd look and you see, yeah, they're doing the right stuff?
Yeah, I left Chicago in 1977 to join an organization called the Institute for Positive Education in Chicago, where the director and the organization was advocating becoming a vegetarian, was advocating for the environment, was advocating that we read, that we teach our children in new ways that would, you know, create thinkers rather than just people that could fill out a test. I mean, we would exercise every morning, you know, before we'd start work. I mean, it was, I mean, and there are people and groups all around the country and African-Americans, too, that focus on a bigger picture than just, you know, than just the rights. We're trying to improve life in general, you know, specifically for us, you know, as you look at the world, we have like the highest rates of diabetes and lung cancer. We're still smoking. You know, we're doing things. I mean, black folks, poor people really around the world are the last ones to stop doing self-destructive things. They just don't know. It's an educational issue. I mean, I think when you do things and you're sincere, as Malcolm used to say, sincerity is his number one quality. Yeah. He said, even if you disagree with me, if you're sincere, I can respect you.
That's good.
And sincerity, means a lot.
That's good. That's good. That's amen. I believe you. What would you say in summary?
If you haven't read the works of Malcolm X, born in 1925, died in 1665, if you haven't read the works, read them. You know, listen to his speeches on YouTube. They make sense. I mean, his early speeches, he's in the rhetoric of the Nation of Islam. He's calling white people devils and that sort of thing and talking about Yaqub every now and then. But there's a certain point he gets kind of bemused about that and gets past it. And he talks about international politics in a way that nobody has people have rarely done since. And it's so important. His bond with African people is really important, too, that that's something that Spike Lee omitted from the movie for some reason, his trip to Africa, where he actually goes to Ghana and other African nations and meets with African heads of state. I think that's what sort of threatened the government on some level. But, of course, you do not have to do a lot to threaten the U.S. government in terms of – I mean, in those days with J. Edgar Hoover in charge, I didn't take a lot. But who have that kind of a stage? So, yeah. Learn about Malcolm X and try to be, whatever you do, try to be sincere.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you so much, Brother Crow.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your wisdom.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us on WYSO.
That was an interview with Larry Crow, an oral historian with the HistoryMakers.com project. Larry is a graduate in history from Wright State University. The executive producer for Call and Response is Dana Perkins. Today's program was produced by Basim Blunt. I'm Daryl Ward.